ever seen a video nasty. I wouldn't. I have far too much.
But how can you judge on video nasty? Oh, you've never seen one.
I actually don't need to see visually what I know is in that film.
Hello there, and welcome to the Video Nasties podcast. My name is Christopher Brown. I think some thought is a bit divided about this film we're going to talk about tonight, The Killing Hour from 1982, a US mystery police procedural, also known as The Clairvoyant as well. I think the reality and the reason for that is possibly that the tone and the nature of saying, you know, this film was seized by police can get people to think that a movie might be something that it's actually not. The Killing Hour has tinges, particularly in its last 20 minutes of giallo, and its opener as well. It kind of explodes with this, like, with three very fast-paced murder scenes, which are all, you know, really excellent to watch. And then slows down considerably as our key police officers who are trying to solve the crime talk and understand and learn more about this rash of murders of all being carried out using handcuffs. Thrown into that as well, we find the story of a young artist who finds herself drawing these pictures, hence the name of The Clairvoyant, of seeing the future and seeing what these crimes are seemingly psychically linked to be able to view what the killer views. It's an unusual, strange kind of quirk, but not one that's introduced very particularly clearly early doors. So with the promise of fast-paced, though not very gory, violence to start the film, I think some viewers may be a little frustrated when we get introduced to an absolutely very, you know, very hard-nosed group of police detectives and our hero, who bizarrely also has a very strange sideline as a stand-up comic.
It started as a game and turned into a nightmare. She was an art student. She had the power to see things beyond the normal range of human senses. She saw murder. Cursed with a terrifying talent, she became a silent witness to murder.
I saw the drawings, Verna.
Maybe in the...
Two men were drawn into the killings. One was a cop.
What do you want?
The other a TV reporter.
What do you think I want? We both know those killings aren't just another statistic. I want to use them on my show.
How do you make these drawings?
My hand takes over.
Well, how does that happen?
It's unconscious.
I'm not going to let anything happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
both men became involved in her life. Both men loved her. One of them had to kill her.
I want the girl kept out of this. Don't put her on the show.
What, are you paying her rent? What's all the interest?
You might try to kill her.
The Killing Hour, a film in the finest tradition of suspense.
So yeah, so The Killing Hour, 1982, American, I suppose, the psychological horror film, mystery, serial killer on the streets kind of film, directed by Armin Mastroianni, who goes on to have a quite successful career in TV movies and also in low budget horror. And stars Perry King, Norman Parker, and Elizabeth Kemp. So it's about a detective and his friend who pursue this handcuff killer who takes people and murders them in a wide variety of ways, to be fair, but the handcuffs are always a motif. They are helped by an artist who sees and then draws the killer's crimes before they are committed. There's also an ambitious TV talk show host, Paul Mack, who is very keen to crack the case using his own means on television, seemingly. And all these things are kind of slowly investigated over time in a very seedy-looking version of New York City. So I think, and as I said before, the film opens with these three very fast, exciting shots. I think the film gets referred to as giallo, you know, and that's understandable, particularly from the start of this film. You know, it's not a giallo; it's an American production, but it does have a certain a sleazy quality to it. And we see as well these early deaths of a variety of men and women. Does kind of capture the attention. And then, you know, we get bogged down but we enter into the world of the police procedural in a strong way. And we're introduced to Norman Parker's Detective Larry Weeks. Now, Parker plays this mixture of, he's a comedian, he dreams of being a stand-up comedian and is an impressionist, really, doing Woody Allen type impressions and George Burns, that kind of stuff. And he rubs up quite aggressively with the chief because of this, which is perfectly understandable. He should be doing his job and not dicking around on like the comedy strip, you know what I mean? But nonetheless, that's the character. Yeah, so Norman Parker, as an actor, in Brooklyn, probably best known for being in Bonfire of the Vanities, but has, you know, had a reasonable career in a variety of TV and movies as well. Indeed, the film features a number of actors that you'll see and you know, dependent on your knowledge of or your love of 1980s TV and films will look distinctly familiar, particularly John Polito, who is appeared in a huge variety of films, particularly, you know, Homicide, Life on the Streets, and various Coen Brothers movies as well. He's a distinctive actor. And Perry King, who has appeared in everything from Mandingo to Class of 84, he plays our Mac, the TV host. And Elizabeth Kemp as well, who plays our clairvoyant, who also, although again, it has died now, appeared in, was on the original off-Broadway version of The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, appeared in a wide variety of TV and of films. And there might be something there that you may remember from the back of your mind in terms of something that you may have seen her in on various stuff. She's, again, another familiar face. And finally, I think it's fair, so we need to also put that Jo Morton appears as well as one of the coppers. And, of course, he's also, he's in Terminator 2 and he's in Speed as well. Again, amongst a huge variety of stuff. So we've got a strong cast, which I think is displayed in some of the quality of certainly the you know, the film is very keen on being a character-led driven police procedural piece with various different rather unusual elements like the supernatural elements and the more general the violence when it does happen is quite shocking. And I think that in turn is mainly down to the director Mastroianni, who actually started his career directing the horror film He Knows You're Alone, which is the Tom Hanks screen debut, but has kind of did a variety of stuff and some film in film work and all sorts of mini series and that kind of thing. He's been a successful creator of made for TV action films and that kind of thing over the years, and almost certainly due to a strong competency as a director. You know, he's also worked on Friday the 13th, the series, The War of the Worlds from the 80s and 90s, that old show, the Tales from the Dark Side, and also all sorts of stuff. So it's easy to kind of to see that he's a capable hand, and I think that capableness is seen fairly clearly with this film. As I say, you've got to kind of tread through what is quite a slow moving police procedure before you get to the more shocking stuff. But when the film does kind of show its bare its teeth near the end, it is you can see why it may have attracted some attention from the authorities. Its mix of sex and violence certainly going to be always something that would catch the attention of the authorities. And indeed, the film was censored at one point in the UK. The film was originally bought by 20th Century Fox in 82, but they did not give it a theatrical release in the US. Did receive one in France, bizarrely, and parts of Europe, and was released on home video by CBS Fox in 84. There was a director's cut released in 2000, and it's been under various releases and from Anchor Bay and Blue Underground since then as well, just in DVD format. And as I say, the reason potentially why that is that the film was released in the UK in pre-cert VHS in 1983 under the World of Wonder 2000 VHS, as we've already said, because of all these films, was seized by other authorities, and then was released cut by 1 minute and 19 seconds from the BBFC in 1986, and those cuts were to the sexual violence at the end of the film. Without giving too much away, who the killer is explained via a flashback to one of the murders that's alluded to at the start of the film. And that involves sadomasochism, group sex, and sex that goes on far, too far, as it were, to the point of death. That sexualized violence is clearly something that even today the authorities do have a bit of a problem with. And while I'm sure it would have released uncut now, the film hasn't had a release in the UK since then. And really it's only available in this country via this Blue Underground DVD release or online if you can have a little rummage around. And there's a few places that seem to have a copy of it uploaded, shall we say. So your mileage in terms of how you feel about this film will almost certainly be linked to how you feel about the revelations at the end of the film, whether the reveal and that thriller element will get your heart pumping or not, and also the how if you can sit through some of this more tedious police procedural. Indeed, I think if you're expecting something that's like a gory giallo, something that sits far more comfortably on a nasties list, then you'd probably be disappointed. However, as we've said, numerous times, there are plenty of films on the nasties list, not just Seized, but also, the 72, I Miss You, Hugs and Kisses, for example, that, you kind of look back and you're like, how is this one of the ones that caused so much problems, Also, as well, I think it's worth to point out that, as I said, the film is very well, it's reasonably well put together. It's weird. I mean, when you've got clairvoyant artists, that's always weird. And at no point does anyone really doubt that she's a clairvoyant. It's never seemed like it should be in her. She's never seen as being a suspect. Even though, her drawings are clearly, indicators of what's coming. And yet, in this world, a world when, that people could stand up in the early 80s and do the Woody Allen impression and get the crowds rolling in the aisles. It's all kind of, it's almost surrealist in terms of the way some of the characters interact and kind of just accept that everything that's happening here is perfectly normal. This is a normal investigation, right down to the rather strange kind of jokey kind of ending, with TV cameras. It's quite heightened, really, which I think is to its credit, despite the fact that it's quite surreal. So you kind of have to bed in and settle in. And then when it goes, it does go, and it's a reasonably exciting thriller. It's tricky sometimes as well with these kind of these films. They're not necessarily they're not necessarily too thrilling. There's not many stories behind it. Indeed, if you listen to the commentary, that the director's commentary on the DVD, the director barely remembers making the damn thing. So that's the nature of these things sometimes. Even the person who made the film can't speak too much about it. Anywho, we'll go on to the next thing. Thanks very much for listening. If you want to get hold of me, please do. My email address is videonastiespodcast@gmail.com. You can get me on Twitter at @orange_monkey. Or you can go to the websites, thevideonastiespodcast.com or thelasthourpodcast.com, where all the podcasts are currently held. Next week, we've got Italian crime thriller, Beast with a Gun, also known as Street Killers, and currently probably best known as Mad Dog Killer, which is... Criminals on the Loose, all that gear, Rampage of Violence, the good stuff. So, until then, take care, and I'll speak to you soon. Goodbye.
I have never seen a video nasty. I wouldn't. I have far too much.
How can you judge on a video nasty? Oh, have you never seen one?
I actually don't need to see visually what I know is in that film.